Jennings, and this is the 24 Frames Cast. So, coming into Christmas, it was my intention to put out a full episode today. And normally what happens at Christmas is that my work gets progressively more and more quiet, and I thought I'd have a lot more time. In fact, the complete opposite happened. It just seemed to get busier and busier. And I was working on an episode that I first actually started doing notes for in 2012. So it's had quite a long gestation period, and I was writing away, and I thought, I don't want to hurry it, and I want to do it justice so that you enjoy it more. And I decided that rather than sort of compromise that, I would release two episodes. This one today, which is going to be just a bonus episode, the topic of which I'll be getting into quite shortly. And I'll do another app review for the next week, which will be part of the main season catalogue, as it were. And then I'll in the new year, it'll buy me some time so that in the new year I can write some more episodes. So if you are new to the show, this is not the norm. This is just a little bit of filler over Christmas to bide me some time so I can write some proper episodes. So to get on with what I'm going to be going on about today. So 2 weeks ago, I'm at a dinner party, which I had spent about 3 days preparing for, only to realise very early on that everyone was going to be too drunk to actually enjoy the food that I'd lovingly prepared. And as I was cooking, the topic got on to the film Anora by Sean Baker. Now, I was supposed to watch Anora the day my mother died, so I'd actually bought a ticket and I was going to go and watch it, and obviously that happened and I wasn't able to. And I think it's fair to say that the film blew up big time. It became an Oscar winner, and it came into the Criterion Collection, and I had some vouchers, purchased it a few months ago, never got around to watching it, and a couple of Sundays ago I was like, right, I'm just going to give it a go now. And I watched it, and I was thoroughly underwhelmed by Anora. And I'm sort of the opinion now that I think Sean Baker does not have a healthy view of women. I think I've read interviews with him in which he's used kind of phrases like sex work is work. And I really felt in Anora that this was coming across. Now, I could go into this a lot more detail. I'm going to spare you that for now. But I was voicing my concerns about the film, and the face of one of the guests dropped. And as sometimes what happens in these situations, people think that you're being personal against them, because he came out to me and said it was one of the best films he had ever seen, and was absolutely raving about it. And I think he thought I was being a bit trolly. And the discussion it was a tiny bit awkward. I said, I think just Sean Baker's remaking the same film over and over. And he snapped at me and was like, well, what about Woody Allen films? You know, they're all the same and all this kind of stuff. And I was like, right, okay. And like I said, perhaps Sean Baker's a conversation for another day. And I tried to caveat my views on Anora. I think Tangerine is one of the best films of the century. And The Florida Project is also, I think, a really good film. It's one of the best films I've seen in a few years. Anyway, I watched Red Rocket, enjoyed it. I saw it again and didn't think as much as I did the first time around. But Anora just left me cold, and that was the end of the conversation. So in order to try and smooth things over, someone suggested talking about films that were by great directors or very good ones that were absolute stinkers. And again, there seemed to be some discussion around that, because one person was sort of suggesting that if someone's a truly great filmmaker, they can't make a terrible film. And I totally, totally disagree with that principle. And I thought it would be fun just to do this bonus episode, in which I'm going to give very, very short shrift to 10 films that I think are legitimately bad, if not terrible. I'm not going to go into the rationale too much, because to do so probably mean I'd have to rewatch some of them and I'd probably end up liking them, and I thought I can't really bother doing that. So I'm just going to go off the first impressions of films that I had watched. And this was actually quite fun to do, because I keep a list of all the films I watch. So I just went to the bottom of the list to see, and I kind of rank them. So obviously at the top is Heat and all that kind of thing, but pretty much from 1 to 100, pretty much everything from 400 down is pretty bad, but there's a very specific place from hell. If you do make it to the bottom of the spreadsheet, you must have done something pretty awful, and you really must have standed out in how crap your film was. So without any more gabbling from me, I'm going to do 10 films by 10 great directors that I think are absolute garbage. So at number 10, we have Quentin Tarantino's Death Proof. I was really looking forward to this Grindhouse project, and I realised about 10 minutes into the absolute god-awfulness of Planet Terror that this whole project seemed completely pointless to me. If they were going to do it, I think they should have just done it on tiny budgets, just to see what they could do with, you know, not much money or a limited budget, and sort of do it as a genuine experiment. I realised very quickly that that wasn't the case. And when it got to Death Proof, I found this film shockingly bad. And it seems just so boring, so pointless, and it felt like Tarantino obviously had to edit the film down to get it within this kind of double bill. And there is an extended version, as I understand, but I didn't think it was exciting. I didn't find it funny. I just found it incredibly boring and ultimately rather pointless. Someone was begging me the other day to watch the extended version on Blu-ray, and I just thought I cannot be arsed with this film. It just doesn't do anything for me. And it seems to be a film that no one talks about. I've never met anyone who, when you talk about Quentin Tarantino, speaks about Death Proof. No, it just seems, I think it's almost been forgotten. And to a degree, I think that's somewhat justified. Number 9, I'm going to have to go with a Francis Ford Coppola film. Now, I've not seen Jack, which I'm reliably informed is absolutely terrible. But I'm going to have to go with Megalopolis, because the reason it's in there is because it seemed to be, every single critic that reviewed it seemed to be kind of like talking around the topic of how bad they actually thought it was. And when I began watching Megalopolis, the first thing that struck me was, if he's been working on this film for like something like 30, 40 years, and this is the best he could do with the script, and it sort of became clear to me why this film hadn't been made before, and it's because it's genuinely terrible. I know it's supposed to push some buttons into, and the acting is obviously very theatrical and daft at times, but Megalopolis is tragically dull. It really doesn't work as a film. And the thing that surprised me most was, if you told me this film was made on a budget of 30 million, I'd be like, all right, so that's why it looks so crap and cheap. But the fact it was made upwards of $100 million, to spend that amount of money to make a film that looks this cheap and boring. And it's one of those ones where sometimes with digital filmmaking, the cleanness and the sharpness of the image doesn't help this film at all. It completely draws attention to all the artifice that's going on in it. But I'm glad Francis Ford Coppola finally got to make this film, because he thoroughly deserves to have had the chance to make it, everything that he's given to cinema. And I think I was reading in Sight and Sound that he said that it would be in his top three films. And ultimately, he's made it for himself, and he's obviously extremely proud of it. And feels that he's made a great film. And I think that's generally, I think he genuinely does. And good for him, because so many directors don't get the opportunity. And it might well be, given his age, the last film he ever makes. And if the last film he ever makes is his lifelong passion project, then yeah, as I said, good for him. But it doesn't detract from the fact that Megalopolis is absolute garbage. It's currently streaming on Mubi, and I began to watch it for about 10. I watched like the first 10 minutes again or something like that. And I was like, no, it's not even an interesting failure. It's not like Darren Aronofsky's Noah, which you can sort of go, yeah, there's something going on here. It doesn't quite work, but at least there was a noble failure. I don't even think that. I just think it's absolutely terrible. Number 8 is Ridley Scott's A Good Year. I'm not going to dwell too much on this. I have had to watch it again as part of a certain piece of research I'm doing, and this just should have been a BBC. Everyone read Year in Provence. It should have been a BBC miniseries that came out on a Sunday night over the winter. It would have worked then. But Russell Crowe is so miscast in this film, and I even think he isn't enjoying this film. Ridley Scott, I obviously makes it look great, but it doesn't work on any level. It's not funny, it's not romantic, it's not anything. And it was a colossal failure, as I understand. And you can see why. It's just everything about it feels so phoned in. And just some of the overacting and the kind of the attempts at kind of almost like slapsticky quiet humour. Absolute garbage film, completely. Yeah, I'm glad Ridley Scott was able to recover from this, because I think people with less clout in Hollywood, this could have been a career ender. Number seven is an Alfred Hitchcock film. Now, I once presented a advert I'd made to a client, and she looked at me completely nonplussed and said, "Well, that's pretty shit." And obviously, when you work in that kind of world, you have to develop a bit of a thick skin. But even I was quite I suppose taken off guard by that comment. And she explained what she actually meant, which was it was very pretty. She you know, conceded I had shot it very well. The shot composition was good. She loved the kind of stuff I'd done at night and the kind of depth of field and that kind of stuff. But it was shit at actually conveying the message that they wanted. So it was obviously pretty shit. And it's a piece of criticism that's always kind of stayed with me. And it's exactly how I feel about the Alfred Hitchcock film To Catch a Thief, because everyone in it, Cary Grant and Grace Kelly and that beautiful location filming along the French Riviera. But it's a shit film. It's almost if Hitchcock's gone, "Yeah, I'm going to make a Vista Vision film. We'll have these beautiful actors in it. We're shooting a beautiful place. That will be enough." And it really isn't. It's a silly story, even by Hitchcock standards. And it completely left me cold. I was thoroughly bored with it. And it's one of those bad films that I actually went back and watched it again 2 weeks later, and I still felt exactly the same. To Catch a Thief is Z-list Alfred Hitchcock that survives because who's in it? That is the only attraction of this film. And you don't often, it's another film you don't hear Hitchcock fans talk very much. A friend of mine's boyfriend was saying, I met him for the first time a few months ago, and he was talking about his favourite Hitchcock films, and Hitchcock was his favourite director. And I mentioned To Catch a Thief, and he went, "Oh, I've not even heard of that one." And that's where I think this film kind of lies. I think it's obviously hasn't been forgotten about. I just don't think it's talked about, primarily because it isn't very good at all. So number six is a film which was the first in a seemingly never-ending list of sequels. I don't even know where we're at with these films now, but it's Steven Spielberg's Jurassic Park: The Lost World, a completely pointless sequel that, as I understand, almost everyone involved didn't really want to have to make. And it shows in the film. It's so bad. It's so uninteresting. It's so dull. It's not even funny. It's just crap. And I hate Spielberg for this, because this is the man who gave us the Hollywood blockbuster. He gave us Jaws and Jurassic Park. And also, he's been, this is the kind of the absolute epitome of what's wrong with sequels when they're done just for the name and just to earn a bit of dough. God knows where we're up to with these films now. I've lost count. I watched Jurassic World, which I sort of liked, but I have no desire to watch it again. I don't know how many sequels or whatever that spawned. And I'm sure there's another one in the works. For the love of God, please stop. And Steven Spielberg, I blame you for this one. Number five is the third film in a trilogy, which to this day, I don't understand why they made a trilogy. And it's The Battle of the Five Armies by Peter Jackson from the Hobbit films. Now, you could argue that all of those films are terrible, but I have a particular hatred of The Battle of the Five Armies because it's idiotically stupid. It doesn't need to exist. And it just labours on and on and on. And you are just like, the battle itself is is just nonsense. It's silly, it's fake, it's phony. The whole thing is just so lifeless and dull. And you just think back to those Lord of the Rings films. You know, the lighting of the torches are being lit on the mountain, and the Battle of Helm's Deep. It means something, though. It has impact, it has weight, it has leverage. That's completely absent in the Hobbit films. And I think the Battle of the Five Armies really exemplifies everything that was wrong with that project. It is legitimately terrible. It's a 1 out of 5 film for me. I have no desire to ever watch it. In fact, I've sort of done with The Hobbit, which is what I've done with the kind of Star Wars films now. I just watched the original trilogy of the Star Wars, and if I want to go into the world of Middle Earth, I just stick with The Lord of the Rings, and that's perfectly fine. Life's too short, I think, to watch god-awful sequels and prequels. Now, next up is one which it was a toss-up between two films for this director, and I really thought long and hard about what one I was going to pick. And Terrence Malick is not someone, if you say Terrence Malick's made a terrible film, there are people go, well, hang on a minute, he can't. He's actually made two terrible films. He's made Song to Song and the one I'm going to add on my list today, Knight of Cups. Now, if you removed the credits from Knight of Cups and you showed it to someone and then said, who do you think directed it? And they were like, no idea. If you said to them, it was written, produced and directed by Brooklyn Beckham, they would go, oh, right, so that's why it's so shit, because that talentless idiot made it. You go, yeah. Instead, not only was this film look like it was, I don't know, written, produced and directed by Brooklyn Beckham, I'm pretty certain Meghan Markle was the executive producer. That's how bad this film is. And you can tell that Christian Bale and Kate Blanchett and Natalie Portman were probably like, oh yes, we're going to get to work with Terrence Malick. And they look like they're just walking around going, what on earth am I doing? This film is laughably bad. It's Song to Song is god-awful as well. But this, some of the lines in it, it's embarrassing. And yes, it sort of looks good. It looks like when you see someone who, when they're demonstrating on YouTube or something how to colour grade, and they're like, hey, look, I shot this on log, and then with my new LUTs that you can download in the description, this is what it can look like. With the sound off it, yeah, it looks perfectly fine. There's some, as I said, there's some great shots in it. But my God, this film is awful. I can't even remember what it's about. I just remember being bored and laugh. I did laugh at this film quite a few times, which is not what I think it's there for. But yeah, if you want a double bill of Terrence Malick crap, go with Knight of Cups and Song to Song, and I promise you will never want to watch them again. Number three is a film which I wasn't impressed with when I saw it was 14. I did it as part of the 70mm Film Festival a few years ago, and I will die on the hill that James Cameron's True Lies is a terrible film. I know it has its fans. I thought it was puerile, silly, and just absolute crap. That scene with Jamie Lee Curtis where she's like stripping and dancing felt all. I did not enjoy that at all. It felt wrong somehow, and I just think this film's juvenile, and that's probably the point, and I'm old and miserable now. But it has no replayability to me. Yeah, it's got a couple of great set pieces, it's a James Cameron film, for Christ's sake, but True Lies, no, I have no intention of ever watching that film again. I've also seen footage of the UHD that's been released, and it's one of those James Cameron retrospective murdering of any kind of film grain, and everyone looks waxy and awful, and it's just, yeah, it's a film that I think needs to get in the bin. Number two was a film that I had to wave the white flag when I watched this film on IMAX and just go, I have no idea what's going on. And I will caveat why I think this film is terrible. I'm currently reading a book about the history of narrative in fiction films and how different narratives work and how different ways of telling stories and all that kind of thing. And I think this film fails as a story, and it's Christopher Nolan's Tenet. And someone told me that if you watch the Blu-ray making of, the film makes sense. Well, it kind of really, I think, gets to the heart of why I despise this film. Because if I have to watch a Blu-ray about the making of your film in order to understand the film, you have failed as a filmmaker. Now, there is no denying that there is an incredible concept in there. There is something in there that's worth watching. But I think Tenet is just, no matter how you gloss it up, I just think it's a really badly told film. Now, I might just be a complete Luddite who doesn't quote-unquote get it or understand it or whatever, and that's on me. But I've watched it 3 times now, and each time I watch it, I'm like, no, this film doesn't work. He has failed in his task as a storyteller to tell this story. And in that regard, I think it's a terrible film. Yeah, hate me for it. But number one was a film that blew me away in just how crap it was. Now, Asif Kapadia has made, I think, 3 stonewall masterpiece documentaries with Senna, Amy, and I think his best film, Maradona. And I think the reason why this film works is that he understands that we don't have gods anymore. We have celebrity, basically. And I think he understands it, and he gets to, he manages to get to the bottom of why we do that. Like, you know, we do see these people as being superhuman, especially the Diego Maradona film. And also, he understands how flawed these people are, which makes, I think, for captivating cinema. But it was obvious that in 2024, he had something incredibly important that he needed to tell us, which is that we are heading for a post-apocalyptic hellhole of a world. And he decided to make a docudrama video essay called 2073, which is basically, part of it is set in the kind of, in the titular 2073, in a kind of Wimplatzer. Samantha Morton plays this kind of oppressed kind of 1984 kind of type character whilst drones fly overhead and everything's awful and fascistic. And he tries to basically make the point that where we are now is where this is, where that film is in 2017, is we are on the path to that now. And he does this by pointing out things like Donald Trump and Brexit and civil unrest, that the only place we're going as a society is this fascistic post-apocalyptic hell. And it is laughably bad. When you have James O'Brien from LBC as one of the people kind of chiming in on this nonsense, you get a good idea of how misguided it is. And the film has this kind of sense of its own importance, which is absolutely nauseating. I'm not the only one who seems to find this film terrible. I've not met anyone who has had a good word to say about it. Even people just like, Jesus Christ, get a grip. It is hysteria. And it's a film. There are people who I know, there are people who will watch this film and sit there and go, oh my God, yeah, this is definitely happening. And it's the type of person who, I had some work done in my house over the summer, and the guy that did the plastering was saying that over the past 10 years, basically, plastering used to be a pretty well-paid job, and now he has to almost work most weekends, and by that he means work a Saturday, so do a six-day week, which is to earn, you know, just near, to get sort of anywhere near the kind of money he used to earn. And he wasn't kind of in any way bitter or horrible about it, but he did say the biggest problem is being underpriced by mainly Polish tradespeople. And he didn't say anything vitriolic about them. He just said that it was just a sort of a fact of life that due to sort of mass immigration, people in his trade had financially suffered. And I was explaining this to one of my girlfriend's incredibly woke friends. She went, he just sounds like a fascist. It's like, oh, yeah, he's a fascist because he has to work more and earns a ton less money. He's got 3 kids to support and a wife. Yeah, he's a fascist because he's not thrilled at that. And again, he didn't say anything vitriolic at all about anyone. He was just pointing out a fact. And the fact that you can just listen to someone that and then go, oh, yeah, they're fascist, That is what this film, that's the type of person this film is aimed at. It is an absolute pile of nonsense. We're not heading towards some god-awful, fascistic hell future. And I'd love to sit down with Asacopado and say, what do you think about juries without trials? Which is something our Home Secretary is seriously considering. You know, is that on your fascist list? But I bet he would caveat it. I bet he would completely ignore that. There's no, you know, we have people now being locked up for things they say on social media. We have doctors being, certainly in its old incarnation, there's the famous case of the doctor who was thrown off Twitter for saying men couldn't have babies. That seems to be that seems to be more authoritarian to me than Brexit. But anyway, enough of that. 2073. It's on BFI player at the moment. So if you fancy a laugh, do go on that and have a look at it. But so that's going to be my 10 crap films by great directors. Hopefully it hasn't put you off listening to the show again if you are a first time viewer. As again, this isn't the normal kind of format for mine. Like, go and have a listen to the other stuff. But yeah, let me know what you think of that list, and let me know if you have films as well which you think are awful by great directors. You can email me at 24framescast@gmail.com. You can follow me on Twitter at Thomas24FC. So between this episode and next one, it will be Christmas. So have a happy Christmas, everyone. Keep safe. And thanks for listening. It's been really encouraging. Some of the feedback I've had from listeners, and as well, since I've been going moving to a weekly format, the amount of new subscribers and downloads has been really quite encouraging. So really looking forward to the new year. And yeah, many thanks for being part of the 24 Frames cast. And I'll be back soon. Bye.